Do you know what, Jen? I don't think I've ever looked better in my life. I think I'm at the peak of my physical prowess.
I think you are.
At the moment. And yeah. I would love to share that with people. I'd love people to be able to see me in the flesh.
It's selfish to keep this.
It is. This amount of radiance needs to be shared. So I thought what I would do is invite people along to see me in real life.
To be in the same room at the Museum of Comedy.
At the Museum of Comedy, because comedy is what I do most of the time.
And you belong in a museum.
No.
It was, how rude.
My self-esteem had climbed and now it's back down on the floor. But no, I love the Museum of Comedy and I'm going to go there and I'm going to take my raw magnetism with me on Wednesday the 24th of April.
Can I come too?
You can. Just try not to sort of detract from my glow, you know.
Okay.
We are going to have the magnificent Jenny Ryan, a magnificent guest.
Ooh.
TBA. Wednesday the 24th of April. Put it in your diaries. Bring your sunglasses because I am shining.
Yeah, get your tickets now. The link is in our social media or from the Museum of Comedy website.
Oh, please do come. Jen's all right as well.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
What's your name?
Jenny Ryan.
Correct. What's my name?
Lucy Porter.
Correct. What are we doing?
We're making a podcast all about quizzing.
Correct. What's it called?
Fingers on Buzzers.
Correct. Hello and welcome to another episode of Fingers on Buzzers.
Let's go again.
I'm excited today. Well, we're talking to one of my very favourite people. We're talking to Tim Vine today.
Yay.
All about Whittle.
Whittle,
which I think is a neglected classic. I've been watching
underrated
some YouTube and oh my goodness, there's a lot to talk about, not least Tim's terrible jokes.
They're wonderful jokes, well, but they're also terrible at the same
they're
time.
They're dad jokes, which is the best kind of joke. We'll also, on the subject of jokes and comedy, we're going to talk to Adam Bostock-Smith, who is one of the writers, but he doesn't write the questions. Oh, no. For The Chase and The Weakest Link. He writes the bunnies and the catchphrases.
The zingers.
In the case of The Weakest Link, the horrible insults that Anne Robinson used to make people wither with. And today we're also going to be discussing, well, we're going to be kind of teeing up what's going to be a regular feature on the show, which is the history of quizzing.
Ooh.
It's a big subject.
It really
it's
is.
A big subject. It's epic. But over the next few weeks, we're going to be looking at the history of quiz.
Fantastic.
So all of that is coming up. So Jen, over the next few weeks, we are going to delve into the history of quizzing. I thought, actually, we've talked a lot about the quizzes of yore, but we've never actually done a sort of investigation into how they all followed on from one another.
Yeah.
So I've been doing a little bit of research.
I mean, how far back are we going? Are we going back to like Socratic method? Because I think that's the birth of quiz.
Well, I mean, if we really want to stretch it out over the over the podcast series, we could. But I was thinking more broadcast quizzing.
Okay.
So I was going to start. I mean, maybe we should talk about, because the origin of the word quiz, of course,
is contentious.
So everyone at home will be sitting by their, I was going to say by their radios, we're not on the radios.
They're probably sitting by their radiograms.
Sitting by their radiograms, winding up the radiogram. But the people at home will be thinking, yes, we've heard the story, which was that, what was the name of the man?
He was Daly.
I'm looking it up, actually.
He was a theatre manager in Dublin.
Yes.
And it was supposedly a bet to popularise a brand new word.
A nonsense word, yes.
So he got
a load of urchins to run around and chalk the word quiz on walls and had the whole city talking about it.
That's right. Apparently
that's nonsense because, yes, you know, it was used, you know, 20 years before that because it's sort of a... It was used to mean an eccentric personage.
Well, that's it.
Or so, someone who's a little bit of a bit weird or a puzzle.
Yes, as far back as 1782, Fanny Burney, in her diary entry for the 24th of June 1782, had used the word quiz to mean an odd or eccentric person.
I think that describes quizzes,
it
really
does, absolutely, doesn't it? Weird. And quiz was also used as a name for a kind of toy, something like a yo-yo, which was popular around 1790. But then this story was publicised in 1875 in F.T. Porter's Gleanings and Reminiscences. He said that in 1791, Richard Daly, the theatre proprietor, had done this bet. So it seems
it's a
questionable.
Story.
But it's quite good that the origins of the word quiz are shrouded in mystery, that they are in themselves an enigma. So, luckily, the origins of broadcast quizzing are much more straightforward because they were recorded. So, we're going to start next week with the 1940s, is where I thought I would go, because that was the era when American radio was in its absolute heyday, and the radio was filled with live quizzes, some of which, I have to be honest, are very, very long and mostly advertising. Isn't it funny how things come full circle?
Oh, yes.
That it was all about the advertising. So we've got some radio quizzes.
Sponsorships and, they all had jingles.
All sponsored by car dealerships. so we're going to start with that. And, of course, you know, some of the famous examples, the Groucho Marx, You Bet Your Life, which then transferred onto TV. Lots of them weren't even really quizzes. They were just like they'd interview someone.
Panel show kind of.
Yeah.
Precursors.
Just there wasn't really much
of a gimmick,
format.
But
there was no sort of actual format. So then the format kind of starts to emerge in the 50s. So we'll sort of move into some of the British ones. Like we imported the $64,000 question. Mm. And then, you know, the 60s, the Golden Shot. That was when Question of Sport started, was in the 1960s.
Still going.
Can you believe that? I know. And then the 70s. Well, I thought with the 70s as well, we can move into talking about live quizzing because pub quizzing started to become a real thing in Britain in the 1970s. Burns and Porter, no relation, were the company that popularised pub quizzes. Then we've got the 80s, which, I mean, we've covered the 80s quite a lot because that was very
much... You've
got
things like Quiz Machining started to come in.
Exactly that. I remember the severe Big Break, I think, had
Big
a quiz machine.
Yep.
And then the 90s, when the prize limits were lifted, so you got things like Raise the Roof, which we've discussed before, but, you know, that paved the way for Millionaire and all of those big money quizzes, and then the noughties, and then it brings us up to where we are right now. So that's what we're going to be doing over the next few weeks, is having a deep delve
into quizzing for profit.
Yes, quizzing for profit and fun. So if anyone has any reminiscences of ye olden daisy quizzes, then do let us know.
What's
if you
the
remember
oldest
the 40s.
Quiz book that you own? I want to know that. Ooh, what's the oldest quiz book out there?
That's a great idea.
I'm pretty sure I've seen one in a shop that was from the 30s.
Yeah.
Which was, it was questions and answers, and there was a lot of them that were very politically incorrect.
Yes.
Questions about the Dark Continent and all that sort of stuff.
Well, even I've been rewatching some of the 80s quizzes, and there is some stuff in there that would make your hair curl as well. So, yeah, the attitudes have changed, but the desire for quizzing has not. So we shall be looking at the history of quiz. On the line, we have someone who I know terribly well, and Jen, you do too.
Yes,
it's the wonderful comedy writer and the man every quiz show needs. It's Adam Bostock-Smith.
Hello.
Hello.
Wasn't expecting that intro, was
I know. You? Was that a bit too much?
It's hard to
hear. That's completely thrown me. I have no idea who you're talking about.
Well, we first met, I think, were we doing the Big Breakfast or something? We were both jobbing writers back in the day.
It was up at Granada. I was on a Shane Ritchie show, and you were on something for Carolina Hearn.
That's right. You were doing Shane Ritchie's Love Me Do, or the Shane Ritchie Wedding Experience.
And the Lucky Numbers thing.
Yeah.
That was a long time ago.
Well, it was. That was back in the 90s. Yeah. It was in the last millennium. And, of course, you now work with Jen on The Chase.
I do. Wonderful it is, too.
And so
say that.
Your job is... Well, You know, you are just the right-hand man to every quiz show host, really, aren't you?
Not all of them, unfortunately. but, yeah, I'll do bits and pieces.
So you will be...
I'm going anywhere near the questions, but that's it.
No, because we have on this show, we have on this podcast, we have spoken to question setters and to question verifiers and all the people who are on that side of things. But of course, the entertainment aspect of a quiz is also very important. People want to laugh as they learn. And and that is where you come in. In fact, because I remember encountering you when I was on The Weakest Link.
Yes.
And I didn't realise that you were working on it. And I saw a shadowy figure emerge from Anne Robinson's tent. And most of the people who emerged from Anne Robinson's tent were in tears and quaking. But you were absolutely fine. So talk us through what your job was on that.
Well, you had two bits of it. You do her kind of what they called the Who Slams,
yes.
Which were the kind of, you know, who's the idiot in the pack or whatever, which she used to say at the end of each round.
Yes.
And then you'd have all the biogs of all the contestants. So I'd sort of spend the night before going through all of those and just sort of fishing out the little bits that she could be nasty to them about, really.
Yeah, because it was a different time back then. We needed a bit of cruelty in quizzing.
Mm.
We've swapped
back a bit
to sort of friendly, happy, light, entertainment-y stuff. But it was quite... Because, I mean, I met her twice, once on The Weakest Link and then once on something else. And she was so delightful on the Test the Nation was the other thing I did. And she was so lovely. And I think if I'd only met her on The Weakest Link, I would have thought that she was a bit of a dick. because she didn't break character.
I think she's brilliant and she was lovely and all of that sort of stuff. But she's, you know, her character on The Weakest Link was, a bit difficult, I suppose.
But she was nice to you and that's the main thing. And some of
she just didn't suffer fools when, you know, if you work with her, you kind of just, you know, you did what you did and pitched the lines to her. And if she liked them, she'd take them. And if she didn't, you shut up, you know.
You'd be sent away with your tail between your legs.
Yeah, yeah.
But there were some sort of classics. I mean, do you remember any that you were particularly proud of? Because I do always, like, some of the... If anyone was... I remember there was a beautician and she was like, oh, so you didn't have time to do anything for yourself today then, you know. She was savage.
Very, yes. It was like the professional school bully growing up. Never really stopped
absolutely.
Finding the weak spot.
And did you enjoy that aspect of it, Adam?
Yeah, I loved every moment. I mean, she could be really, really awful to people. And, I mean, you just couldn't get away with it now with some of the stuff she says, you know.
Because
it wouldn't be allowed. So.
Like fat shaming and, you know, the physical, personal nature of the insults. Did you ever have to rein yourselves in?
What wouldn't kind of be a big deal now? I mean, she'd quite happily go on suggesting people were lesbians or whatever just because they worked in the prison service. And I mean, you just wouldn't do that anymore.
No, so, isn't that funny that it's... I mean, I suppose because back then it sort of didn't even really seem homophobic, or it was just sort of different times.
Well, it was a little bit kind of, you know, playground stuff. It wasn't really kind of... I don't know. Well, from my point of view, it never felt like you were really, you know, taking people apart, but I don't know.
Well, people kept coming back on the show as well.
Yeah, people were signing up because that was part of the experience. Oh, what's she going to get me on? You know,
I know, and actually you do watch it now and people do love it. You know, I mean, maybe, you know, there's a case that, you know, people shouldn't be oversensitive, and actually there is still something very funny about her just absolutely... There's one where there's just a very boring man on and she's so relentless about how boring he is.
Yeah.
And, you know,
people knew exactly what they were getting into and they really enjoy it. I mean, I think they really enjoyed it anyway. Most people did. I don't think there was ever a case of anyone being properly offended.
No one stormed off, even on the comedian special, where, you know, comedians are quite egotistical. Phil Nichol got naked as we established.
Last episode, didn't we?
Yes, but that was about the worst thing that happened. But what a contrast then. So going from horrible Anne Robinson, obviously not horrible in real life, but the horrible persona, to working with Bradley, who is sunshine in a jar, isn't he?
Yes. Of course he is. Yeah, yeah. But he's only nasty about the chasers, really. So that's
yes.
Kind of,
yeah, you get to write mean lines for the intros and keep them.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
You never know what
I'm never mean. I'm never mean about you, though, Jenny. I'm always nice about you.
Well, I only find out sometimes when the episode's aired. They go, shocking. No, I think I get off quite lightly in comparison to the others. Because
I think Anne and Mark and Sean have a fairly hard time of it.
Yes, they do.
And then, well, actually, it's funny, isn't it? Because I sort of, I remember watching it and just thinking, oh, it's such a lovely, warm, cosy show. And then just those little barbs are actually quite nice. That it gives it a little bit of edge, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Well, it sort of plays up to their stereotypes, doesn't it?
So, we need to be taken down a little notch and then built back up.
And Bradley is, of course, a joy to work with.
Yeah, Bradley's just brilliant. I mean, he is just great. He's, you know, he is what you see, you know.
I know. I mean, people always say, it's funny, isn't it, when you work with people and there's certain people that you just know that if you said, oh, actually, no, they're not, you know, they're a bit up themselves or whatever, it would break people's hearts. And thank God Bradley is nice because, you know, it would be really awful
would break the hearts of millions.
Oh, my God, but he is absolutely is lovely.
It's one of the most common questions I get asked is, what's Bradley really like? And occasionally I just feel like going, he's an absolute git.
Just to see.
He spits on you if he passes you in the street.
Well, it's extraordinary when you go and do the chase. And, like, because I did one where there was an audience, you know, the celebrity special. I'm a celebrity these days. And but the audience, like, they gave him a standing ovation for about 10 minutes at the start of the show, the studio audience. Yeah. I mean, the love is such, it's just, it's deservedly so.
And they all bring their Peppa Pigs to
yeah, the Percy him. Pigs. Yeah.
Peppa Pigs.
So it's all, I mean, all the lovely things you've done and brilliant things you've done, The Weakest Link and The Chase, obviously working with lovely Bradley. What have been the dark times in the light entertainment? We've all got them. You know, when you work at the light entertainment coalface, I did a show for Granada. What was that one called?
The Inexplicable Quiz Show.
What was the one that it was? Oh, yeah, that one.
Yeah.
I've done it. Oh, no, it was...
Baffle.
No, it was Waffle.
Which should have been called Baffle. That was the one.
Waffle. We've spoken about it on this podcast, Adam, my time on Waffle, where I had to do the contestant chat. So I had to talk to the contestants and find their funny stories to then hand on to the host. Have you ever had to do that job?
No, I haven't. They keep me away from kind of members of the public.
You're not allowed to mix with people.
Yeah, no, I don't go anywhere near them.
So has there ever been a job that you've really dreaded? I mean, you don't need to name names.
Oh, no, there's dozens of them. the only jobs you don't really enjoy, I suppose, are the stuff where there isn't much to do. And sometimes you do get... But, that, you know, sometimes you get bought in the show, particularly if it's just starting and they don't really know what they need a writer for. And then, you know, you can turn up and there isn't really a job there.
Yeah.
And that can be a bit, you know, you just sort of wander around wondering what you're doing there and just cashing the checks.
Yes. And just hiding in the corner of the studio. I've done that, where you sort of think, maybe if I hide, then they won't notice that I'm not really doing anything.
Yeah, exactly.
And what do you think a writer can bring? What do you think the main jobs of a writer on a quiz show are? What do you think
I mean, I suppose just on the quiz shows I've not done loads and loads of it, but on those two, I mean, it is just those little moments of kind of building character. So whether it's just like the Chaser's character or it's kind of, you know, Anne's character, it's just sort of, you know...
Yes.
It's world building, isn't it?
Yeah, and just that little sort of junctions within the quiz, I suppose.
And I suppose now, with the nature of internet culture, those sort of zingers, so when you think back to The Weakest Link and some of the bits on The Chase, it's kind of about what's grabbable for little clips and sound bites, isn't it? So I guess, you know, do you feel a sense of victory if something that you've written goes viral?
Yeah, I'm not sure an awful lot that I have written has gone viral, but I mean, the few bits that people remember are always nice, you know.
And also, well, I suppose for you, the making Bradley laugh is quite a...
Yeah, if you can do that, if you can get a laugh off the camera crew, that's always the best, because, you know,
they set him off.
Cynical bunch of
oh god, yeah, they've seen everything, haven't they? Yeah. They're like, we're not laughing. Yeah. We've been here for 3 hours and we've not had any dinner, so it's all about the crew. It's all about the crew.
Yeah, it is.
Thank you so, so much for talking to us, Adam, for your insight into the world of the writer, the often neglected role of the writer on the quiz show.
Always neglected, hero, I think.
Yeah, unsung hero. You should pay that man more. That's what we're saying, basically. Give that man a pay
rise. Yeah, that's the takeaway from
this. It is, absolutely. Thank you so much for talking to us.
Thank you.
Bye. All right, pleasure.
It's time for the
listener quiz.
Beautiful.
No, it wasn't.
If you couldn't hear that, if you are over the age of 40, you probably couldn't hear the top end of that. That's the listener quiz is coming up now.
Quiz. Still no jingle. Another week, still no jingle. But we've got a listener quiz. And what's lovely about this is it's following on from last week when we were talking about our nemesis. And somebody else, in fact, not just anybody, Aaron Jackson. Only Aaron Jackson.
Only Aaron.
Yeah, he's written in with his nemesis subject, which producer Amanda is going to reveal all now. And I am with you on this one, Aaron. I hate this one.
Right, well, I think this could be my nemesis as well, because there's some slightly tricky pronunciations.
Okay, so setting this quiz will be your nemesis. Okay.
Absolutely. So it's on the subject of horse racing. So Lucy, that's not your favourite. Jenny, how are you feeling about that?
Not great.
Well, we shall see.
Cheltenham Gold Cup. Hey. Royal Ascot. I mean, you know, this is literally going to be my approach. That's all I've got. Kentucky something or other.
Let's see how you do. Question number one. When Tiger Roll won the Grand National early this year, it became the first horse since Red Rum to win back-to-back Grand Nationals.
See, all of the things I knew, you've just said in the question.
True.
Okay, well, we'll see how you get on. The feat has only been accomplished 3 times before. Name any of the 3 horses that did it.
Okay, Buzz.
Go on, Lucy.
Nijinsky.
No.
Just any time.
So it's going to...
Horses I've heard of. Seabiscuit.
Red Marauder.
Just keep going. If any of them appear, I'll
let you
know.
Because it's going to be an older horse than Dobbin. Red Rum. And I don't really know that much about
Champion
horse
Champion the Wonder
before.
Horse.
Yeah.
No, I've got literally...
Mr. Ed.
Give us an initial. That
yeah, give
make
us a clue. Can you mind
well, there
it?
Are 3 options. So let's say it's the... And it's a ranking in the army.
The colonel, the major.
The general.
The colonel, you got that correct, Lucy. Would you like to say which years the colonel had the back-to-back wins?
1872 and 1893.
You are so close. I'm going to have to give you this. It's 1869 and 1870.
Oh, I was going 1871, so...
Fine. Do you want to know the other ones? I can't pronounce them.
Go on.
Okay, Reynoldstown in 1935 and 1936. I can pronounce that. But here we go. Abd el-Kadir in 1815. 1851.
Wow. You did very well there, Abd el-Kadir.
Okay. Nice. So that I think that's the trickiest question, really.
I hope so.
I think you both stand a really good chance of getting the next one. Okay. Question number 2. Which racecourse hosts the Scottish Grand National every year? Yes.
Yes. Actually, that is the only Scottish racecourse I've heard of. What other ones are there? She's got nothing, listeners. She's looking at me like... No.
It's the only one I need to know about.
Okay.
Scottish
professional.
Yeah. So, one all. In the United States, the Triple Crown is won by any horse that wins the Kentucky Derby, the Preakness...
Buzz!
Jenny.
Belmont Stakes.
Correct. So, would you like me to finish the question?
I would, yes. I didn't.
So, in the United States, the Triple Crown is won by any horse that wins the Kentucky Derby, the Preakness Stakes, and which third race is held at the namesake racecourse in New York? And as Jenny... correctly stated, the Belmont Stakes.
I was kind of waiting for that question to come up, but I just needed to know which. I knew it would be, and which other one?
Lucy, nice. I think you're going to get the next one.
Go on,
I really do. Okay.
Nijinsky.
Keep going. Question number 4. Toby Maguire is the star.
Buzz.
Jenny, you got in there this. First.
Seabiscuit.
It is Seabiscuit. I'm going to say the question, though.
But you did say the answer about 4 questions ago.
I know, I did think maybe if you got in there a little bit quicker.
I'll get the point.
So the question is, Tobey Maguire is the star of which 2003 film, based on a race between the eponymous horse and War Admiral, seen as the best horse in the world at the time, and as Jenny correctly said, it's Seabiscuit. So I think... you're in the lead, Jenny, aren't you?
Oh, she's leading by a furlong. She's galloping over the next bench. Diddly diddly ding ding ding. I don't know. Are we on the flat or are we steeplechasing? I don't really know.
I think we're on the flat.
To be honest, I'm knackered. I'm being melted.
You're
down
being
the balloon, basically, yeah.
You're in the factory already. Okay. Both your legs are broken.
Yeah. Just take me behind a tent and do what you need to do. That's how I feel most days.
Lucy, you can get this next one, though. Okay. Final question. Frankie Dettori famously won all 7 races at the British... Jenny.
Come on. Give us a chance.
Yes, but what year?
Oh.
I remember the chance. I'm galloping up on the rails.
2010.
No, Lucy, it's your guess.
Oh, I'm going to go one ear either side because she looked like she was...
I'm going to give you the full question. Frankie Dettori famously won all seven races at the British Championships Day at Ascot. Which year was this?
Oh, wow. I'm going to go a little bit earlier. I'm going to go 2008.
No.
7, 9.
We 11, could be here a while.
13, 12.
2002.
No.
Other way, 14, 15.
No, no, the other way from...
Nine,
Jenny said
eight,
2002.
Seven,
go
6, 5, 4, 3.
No, you're
one.
Going the wrong way. You're going the wrong way. The Jeff. Horse has run the wrong
yes.
way.
Stewart's inquiry.
I'll give you the decade, shall I?
Yeah.
90s.
1999.
No.
1998.
No.
1997.
I've just, my head is down now.
How long has he been in a jockey
Keep
car?
Going. You
95, 97,
no, I can't
six.
Believe you missed it. It's 96.
Yeah, he's still going, the lad. He's still riding the
he's
horses.
He's still going. Well, you know, you don't get any taller, do you? That's it. As long as you're still short, you can cling on. Is that not how it works? I always thought I could have been a jockey. It's a missed opportunity. It's probably too late
it's not,
now.
It's not
it?
Too late. Frankie Dettori's still at it.
I suppose. 46.
You can do it.
Retrain. I mean, of all the things I thought I might retrain for, yeah.
You can do it.
Yeah, right, yeah. Okay, so...
if there are any trainers out there who are willing to take on a new apprentice jockey.
I mean, I'm not particularly fit and I don't know anything about horse racing. But other than that, I'm very keen. I'm very willing. I'll bring my own oats. I'll bring my own oats and jodhpurs.
Sugar lumps.
I've got a whip. I haven't.
It's not going
really.
To that.
I haven't got a whip. I just, you know, I just said that. Send it in tonight. Anyway, right. So, with that wonderful display of horse racing knowledge, I think, well, Jenny, you are a thoroughbred. And I am a knackered old mare. So, thank Robin. You very much, Aaron Jackson.
Thank you, Aaron.
That was a great quiz.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
On the line with us now, we have the one and only, you may know him from the hit sitcom Not Going Out, which he was in for many, many years. You may know him as the winner of the best joke at the Edinburgh Fringe in not just 2010, but also 2014. Or you may know him, as I do, as the best goddamn darts player on the comedy circuit. That's how I think of you, Tim Vine. It's Tim Vine.
Hello, how are you both?
Splendid.
Lovely. Lovely to hear you.
Oh, it's lovely to be here.
I have been treating myself to re-watching the bits of Whittle that I can find.
There's not enough.
Well, without knowing it, doubling the overall ratings.
Well, do you know, I have such affection for it because I remember it well at the time. And looking back, I mean, oh my goodness, the baby-faced, floppy-haired, suited Tim Vine.
I know.
So
there was something slightly too big about some of those jackets, are there?
Well, it was very much a look of its time, wasn't it?
Yes, it really was. Very much. Yeah.
And that
I had hair in a sort of. Well, I had hair, but it was in a kind of curtain thing with a very unapologetic centre parting, which I feel like I'm always apologising now for.
It was evocative of the era.
It really was the hair curtain of the late 90s that we also enjoyed. And now you look like you were having a great time on Whittle.
Oh, it was great fun, yeah. And we did two blocks of 65. and I think there was probably a pilot in there somewhere as well. So I think the total was 132 of them I did.
Good. In what space of time then did you...
We were doing five a day, so it was two blocks of 3 weeks.
Wow, yeah. That's intensive. Quite an output, isn't it? And that's... For most quiz show hosts, that's like a fairly intense job. But when you look at Whittle and the amount of jokes that you were telling...
One thing I learned that I thought to myself, well, there's an audience, so I can do some jokes. But all the audience have all got their buzzers and, you know, their little sort of, whatever you call that thing they hold with the buttons on it.
Yes.
Of course, so they're concentrating on that. It's a bit like when you do countdown. It's a similar sort of thing, normal countdown. Mm-hmm. I mean, you throw jokes at these people, and they're all concentrating on the game. So it's a little bit of a swirling wind around the jokes. You know?
Yeah. Not here to laugh, I'm here to quiz.
Yes. Well, yeah, exactly. Even from hosting pub quizzes and attending pub quizzes, I know that there's nothing worse than when you try and land a joke to a room.
There's never an optimum place to do it. The only time you can do it at the very beginning, before the thing starts.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, you did have a brilliant thing as well. So for anyone who hasn't seen Whittle, do look it out on YouTube. But so it was 100 contestants who you whittled down to a final winner who would win £250 or £500.
That's right, £250 with the possibility of doubling it.
I know. And they wanted that money. They really did.
They really did.
It was huge as well. The thing that I noticed was the set. They do like a reverse shot of the set. And it's so big because you just think, 100 people.
Got to squeeze 100 people.
It was like the UN. Extraordinary.
The synod maybe or something like
that.
But it's those wide angle cameras there, they do make places look bigger. It was actually quite intimate. It wasn't it was only 100 people.
Was it Maidstone?
In Maidstone, yeah. And you know, it was originally, it was called, because they did a 25 of them on ITV before it ever came to Channel 5, and it was called Everybody's Equal, and Chris Tarrant hosted it. And when I was asked whether I was interested in doing it, I said, yeah, I'd love to do it. I said, I've got to say that the title, Everybody's Equal, sounds more like a description than a title. So it was my idea to come up with Whittle, which some people thought was, Whittle? What do you mean Whittle? I said, well, it's just got a bit more punchy than Everybody's Equal. So I was really pleased when they took that up, actually.
It was lovely, because it was a lovely fun name for fun.
Yeah.
And the thing that I really loved was at the beginning, as you say, because you had the floor at the beginning, and you would always do a different catchphrase.
That's right, yeah. And we tried,
genius.
I think, in Series 2, I think the idea of people joining in at home dawned on someone, so it came up on the screen as well.
Yeah, because it was slightly baffling. In fact, one of the ones that's on YouTube, the catchphrase that you do at the beginning is, "Are you listening, Donald Trump?"
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Is it really?
It chilled me to my very marrow. I was like, what did he know back in 1997, 98?
Wow. Was that the answer to the catchphrase or the beginning of it?
That was your bit. That was what you said.
That was my bit. What was the answer to that?
I can't remember.
Yes.
I'll have to go back.
Yes, I now rule the world.
Yes. They all just got a sort of glassy, hypnotised look. And that's how he swept
with it. We had one where they had to get... You know, five lots of 100. Okay, basically you have the same audience, but 10 people come out each time. So over, it means you've got to. I suppose it means you've got to have 150 people in a day, doesn't it? Probably.
Yeah. Wow.
If you do the math,
yeah,
I've never done the math before.
Get rid of 10 every time.
Yes. Yeah. But it was quite hard to get hold of that many people.
Yeah. And Maidstone,
there is one where they went to where they had a Japanese language school and they'd got some students, and basically most of the people in the audience couldn't speak English, so they were told someone had to translate the director's information and to say that, you know, you press one of these buttons, and we ended up with someone who got through just randomly by pressing buttons to the last 10 who couldn't speak English. And so, bless him, I felt rather sorry for him, really, because the first question, which is supposed to be like everyone stays in for the first question because there's only 10 people in, and it was something like, which one of these girls' names is also a Christmas song? But of course, nine people said Carol, and this poor Japanese student who couldn't speak English I don't think he pressed something like Louise or something. He was out.
Although I have to say, I mean, often the intellectual standard of the contestants wasn't that much greater. Yeah. The one that I watched, because I remember thinking at the time, because they always used to pick out four. I love the thing, it was the computer has picked out four people that they think are the ones to watch. Now, you know, you look back and you go,
four to follow.
Yeah, four to follow, that's it. Yeah, and you think, God, that was a very sophisticated computer for the late 90s.
And they had to wear a yellow fez.
Yes. Oh, yes, that's right.
And then there was the mask, obviously.
And the mask as well.
I think that's a beautiful low-tech solution.
It was a bit, again, it's quite analogue, isn't it, to make people put on a mask.
I know, but you see, I wish there was more of that kind of punk ethos to game shows now, because there was something.
Yeah, no, I agree. Well, another thing that happened on that show was, because this whole second half was whittling down 10 contestants, so you had to not be too, you know, too tricky with the questions too early, otherwise it got down to too few people.
Yeah.
And there was one occasion when on one, they did the first question, and then there was a sort of tape stop, and I thought, oh, what's happened here? And someone came out to me and said, Tim, basically, we've got a winner. So you're going to have to fill 13 minutes. Oh, so I sort of did my act, I think.
Oh, brilliant.
That's
well,
a platform.
You know, exactly, a Channel 5 afternoon audience. I picked out one question, right? So this was when we still had a fair amount of people in. In fact, I'm going to have to do the maths. Mm. But the question was, what kind of food is gazpacho, right? And the options were refried beans, floury pancakes, kosher meatballs, or soup, right?
Oh, okay, right. Now, I think I would know from 2019. I'm not sure I would have known at the time.
Yeah, so, hang on. So there were...
What would you do?
Well, at this stage... Right, now I know the answer to this, and I know Jen does because she knows the answer to everything. So at this stage, I think there were 54 contestants left in.
Right.
So I want you to tell me roughly. So what kind of food is gazpacho?
It's soup.
Yeah, so of 54 contestants, how many correctly identified it as soup?
Well, I'm going to say I can't believe it's less than 20.
Okay, and what do you think, Jen?
So I'd say 20.
I'm going to go 24.
It was 27. Oh, they've actually done a lot better. See, I was using this question as an illustration of how poor they were. But actually,
it was, you know.
But then we
didn't that's not too bad.
We didn't have gazpacho back in the 90s, really.
You probably get it as a shot in a trendy restaurant these days before your main course.
You would, you'd have a gazpacho shop. But more importantly, Tim, can you tell me what was the joke you followed up that question with? What kind of food is gazpacho?
Well,
what would that have suggested to you?
It would have been a joke about soup, would it?
It's sort of dining. It's about dining.
About dining. Was it at the start? I went to this restaurant.
Yes, it did.
So I went to this restaurant. Do you know what? This is quite sad, but I have actually got a list of all the jokes I did on Whittle Subway on the cupboard on the stairs.
Have you? Yes. Oh, my God, please, will you get them out and we can do...
Let me just have a little look if I can see it, find that, actually.
Yeah, do a special.
But anyway, remind me what the next bit of the joke is. I'm now in the cupboard under the stairs having a look for you here.
Okay, so I went to a restaurant the other day and a policeman walked in.
Yes.
What happened?
Is the next bit give it away?
Something happened. Yes, I think
so. A policeman walked in and...
Something happened to the policeman.
He got... did it? What's the next couple of words?
A policeman walked in and fell over.
I thought that's... Something.
No, you said something. I went to a restaurant the other day and a policeman walked in and fell over. I said, it's all right, I'll pick up the bill.
Hey!
Oh, that's all right. That must be. I've got the file here, marked Whittle.
Oh my gosh, right. This is amazing.
So it's just Whittle.
Hit us with a couple of Whittle jokes, then, please.
Yeah, let's have a look what I've got here. Look, this is it's quite exciting, actually.
Live from
Tim's
cupboard.
Right, okay.
Cupboard.
Whittle jokes. Mason, February 14th to March 4th. This is me and John Archer. We used to write these things together.
Wow.
People with the middle name the, it must be, oh yeah, you know what, Henry VIII, Richard Lionheart, Engelbert Humperdinck have all got the middle name the. I don't quite make sense. Some of these are paraphrased, I think.
Yes.
Paris, it's like Blackpool with onions. That's the second one on the list.
Exactly.
Great Fire of London, and then it says Great. I've got a bigger garden. I don't understand half of these.
No, that makes sense.
Oh, they're both at the back of the marathon with the Union Jack. I thought he's flagging.
Hey!
Pi R squared called round to the Circle's house. He said I was in the area.
Bring back Whittle. Whittle. He's still got the jokes. Come on, yeah. We could revive not only the format, but also the jokes. I think it'd be amazing.
Yeah, and it's actually, there's 245 jokes listed here. I don't know which one that was, but it might have been... Crikey, I've even got, here, just randomly, Whittle, show two. I can tell you what question one was of show two. Ooh, what substance makes plants green?
Chlorophyll.
Correct. You're supposed to wait for the...
come on, format. Yeah.
Is it gazpacho? No, it's chloroform. Cappuccino is one of them. Yes. Cochineal. What's cochineal?
That's a food colouring.
Is it? And then chlorophyll.
Very
and then
good.
The joke I put is my neighbour was painting his front door purple. I said, what are you doing? He said, I'm moving house.
Hey! Oh, do you know what? It's been... Aww. Well, I would happily watch Whittle again if they asked you back, if they got in touch, if Channel 5 said it's time for a revival. Any interest?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yeah. Nowadays, I shy away from doing those shows where you have to do an enormous number.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I love the idea of... If someone said to me, let's do Whittle as a weekly show and just do 10 of them, I'd go, yeah!
Yeah.
If you said, let's do 700, I'd go, well...
I tell you what we need is we need a prime-time celebrity Whittle that's just one a week. So it's just
what a great idea. Celebrity Whittle.
Celebrity Whittle.
What a great idea. 100, right.
Because celebrities are much easier to find, so you could get 100. No problem.
Oh, that's true. You need 100.
Together.
Yeah, it's fine. But you could get everyone who's ever been on Geordie Shore, Towie and Made in Chelsea. That's your... You're already 100 there.
Yeah.
Straight away.
That'd be a fun thing to do, though, wouldn't it? But isn't there something else that has lots of... what's that thing that's on a Saturday night and it's kind of big...
Oh, there's Impossible.
Impossible.
Oh, yeah, that got 100 people in it.
It's been such a pleasure. Thank you so much for talking to us.
A pleasure. Lovely to speak to you both.
And
take
thanks
care.
For the jokes.
Thank you,
lots of love. Bye.
Bye.
Right, guys, that is the end of this particular episode.
And another peep behind the curtain.
Well, I very much enjoyed listening to Adam and his tales of you know, Anne Robinson actually being quite nice.
Yeah.
And Whittle, I'm really in favour of bringing Whittle back now.
Bring back Whittle.
Mainstream, prime time, Whittle, yeah. Whittle on one. That's what I'm looking for, Whittle on one. So thank you to Tim Vine for that. And also thank you to Aaron Jackson for... His London horse racing.
Obviously, from that.
I was just doing the action.
She was riding a horse.
I was riding a horse.
Just to demonstrate her future jockey ability.
There we go. Strong thighs. Listen to
that's
those thighs.
Need.
Look. Like rocks. All right. Well, guys, thank you for listening to my thighs.
The sound of Lucy's thighs. It's a production.
They will be back next week. Actually, they're quite sore now. Anyway, right, yes. Thank you very much for listening to Fingers on Buzzers. See you next time.
Bye.
Fingers on Buzzers starred Lucy Porter and Jenny Ryan and was produced by Amanda Redman with music by Kevin MacLeod and Justin Edwards. Email quiz at fingersonbuzzers.com and tweet at fingersbuzzers. Thanks for listening and don't forget to join us next time for more Fingers on Buzzers.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There are stories and mythology that this country has woven around Black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like worried of police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all
wrong.
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.